Last time on Culture File, we began a conversation with Sean Lynch, an Irish artist whose work grows out of archival searches, chance meetings, and remarkably often, scrapyards. Last time we heard of Lynch's hunt for the many afterlives of the DeLorean DMC-12. And this time we start back in the scrapyard, watching the destruction of another talismanic automobile.
It's a piece in many ways I'm still dealing with, because there's a video that I made as part of it that I haven't shown to anybody yet. In a nutshell, National Recycling are a company out in Clondalkin. They purchased Sean Fitzpatrick's second car, a 1992 BMW, and put it up on eBay for whoever would pay the most money would get this opportunity to press the button in the crusher out in Clondalkin and crush this man's car. And this was some sort of enacted folk ritual in many senses around the last days of, or perceptions of the last days of the Celtic Tiger. And of course, the Fitzpatrick hadn't been to the courts yet. This was early 2011. So I was kind of incredibly interested in some way at the pace of certain things. And when you kind of think about the state or the Irish state and how things are processed, I guess, in terms of the courts and everything, already there's a kind of inquisition court going on in a scrapyard out in Clondalkin, you know? And I'm kind of really interested in those situations and how one thing has a pace. The state here in Ireland has a pace, normally something we're all incredibly frustrated with, I think, across the way. But then you get communities coming together that in some sense realise, let's do this as a certain purging of this experience that we've all been through as a nation. So I went out to the scrapyard and tried to get, there's actually a lot of artists out there that day trying to get pieces for the recycled material from a Shawnee Fitzpatrick car, and I got a very, very small piece, just the taillight from the back of it, and placed it in a work I was making on O'Connell Street here in Dublin, which was a revolving display of artifacts that in some way were related to the urbanity of Dublin. And so in many ways it was almost a gesture, like a seagull picking up something off of the ground in the scrapyard in Clondalkin and just dropping it on O'Connell Street. That was the idea, that it should feel not very clearly explained, you know. Also, it's nice sometimes to make artworks that don't explain themselves too quickly, that there's a kind of slow burn about how they're experienced.
One of the ways you approach recontextualizing your own work is through publications, through books. Maybe, are they as important to your practice as anything that happens in a gallery?
Yeah, I mean, there's mood swings, I guess, between the medium sometimes, so you can be very engrossed in something that's gallery based, or other times there can be pieces that you know need a certain sense of publicness outside of a gallery, and this can be where publications work, you know. I spent 3 years working a lot on trying to understand John and James O'Shea, two stone carvers who nobody knows where they were born or when they were born. They appeared fully formed carvers here in the early 1850s in Dublin, and did so much beautiful carving on the museum building in Trinity College. And they ended up going to Oxford, and in Oxford there's many famous stories of their exploits there and how they became incredibly transgressive characters in terms of the development of the museum culture in Victorian Britain. They were rebutted by some of the authorities in the University of Oxford, who were putting up this money to build a new museum there. The two brothers canvassed Ruskin with a photographic portfolio, hustled him into getting the job over there, came over with Dean and Woodward, and carved a lot of quite amazing capitals inside in the main museum court. The idea was that they would have free rein in whatever they would carve there. And so they wanted to carve a monkey on the front of one of the buildings. And they were refused this because, of course, Darwin's theories were coming to the fore at the time. And it didn't particularly maybe want an Irish lad who was being lampooned in Punch magazine as being a primate and someone on the edge of the empire, far, far away from any kind of Anglo-centric understanding of the world, for them to come over and carve monkeys and buildings in Britain. So they were censored in doing this act and came back, and they carved the King Catacaish Coran onto these windows instead. And the King Catacaish Coran is the cat up in Roscommon and Sligo who protects the gateways into hell up there in the caves. So, and this is very, very connected to a lot of Irish mythology around stone carving and on Gabon Sayre. So this, in some way, part of the publication was to decode all of this and try and write it up and, in a sense, try and be very associative with it. So, for example, some of Noel Sheridan's work, Everybody Must Get Stones, is on the same page as D. O'Shea's work in stone decades before him. And in some way, the publications act as compendiums of information that might be useful in terms of the next project again. So I'm quite happy to be wrong about a lot of the presumptions that might come true in the artworks, and I'm really interested that they get revised over time by me or by an audience or whoever else wants to come across them and whoever else believes they might have a use value, you know. So you can find things out, they might be part of one project and they might continue years later for me, or hopefully for someone else might be interested in it too. Yeah.
Sean Lynch there, and next time in the final part of our interview we come to Lynch's latest work, pursuing a story that was something of an obsession with 80s art makers in Ireland, the legend of Sweeney.